Good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 18th of February. Very nice to have you with us. It is our roundtable panel. Let me introduce our panel to you, then we'll let you know how you can get in on our conversation. You probably already know how to do that, but I'm just going to let you know. If you're new and are just joining us, we would love to have you.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's get some new blood in here.
That's right. Let's shake things up. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
Very nice to see you. SUNY Albany professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And Times Union associate editor Mike Spain doing triple duty this week, and we thank him very much for filling in for the vacationing Ray Graff, and very nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here.
Always.
He's so smart. I mean, that's what we love about Mike and, and Rosemary. They really, they have a lot of heft to them.
Oh, I'm trying to lose that. I have a Fitbit on. I'm running. Oh, it's bad.
I gave up my Fitbit. I used it for a while.
It just bosses me around all day long. Walk more. Sleep more. Well, stop eating.
But it
drink water.
But it doesn't give you. It doesn't give you what you have to do. If I'm on the bike for an hour every morning for all of my years, every morning, I get no credit for that.
I thought that if you wore it on your ankle, it counts every pedal, every push of the pedal as a step.
No, he's talking about in the past. Like all those years.
Oh, I see.
Like you don't come in, right. Yeah.
Actually, that's very nice of you, but no, I was talking about today.
I thought you were looking for
I do
for
an hour every morning, and I want credit.
All right. We'll give you credit. Let's go
so
to
important.
We go to the point in the show where we invite you to join us roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. WAMC Roundtable. Our webpage is WAMC.org/roundtable, and you can comment there. There's a post for today's date,
tweet
which
me.
Happens to be 2/18/15, and you can click on that and be all set. Let's go to the news of the day. We'll start off with immigration, the story of immigration that happened yesterday and really sent the White House in, is tizzy a proper word in this case?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Okay. So the President Obama's immigration policy has been put on hold one day before hundreds of thousands of undocumented immigrants were to begin applying for work permits and legal protection. Administration officials postponed the president's sweeping executive action on immigration indefinitely, saying they had no choice but to comply with a federal judge's last-minute order halting the programs. The judge's ruling was a significant setback for the president, who had asserted broad authority to take executive actions in the face of congressional Republicans' refusal to overhaul the immigration system. White House officials have defended the president's actions as legal and proper, even as his adversaries in Congress and the states have accused him of vastly exceeding the powers of his office.
Do you all remember when, in the world's greatest picture that has ever been made, Mr. Roberts, Roberts has thrown the captain's pine tree overboard, the symbol of his authority, and nobody knows why the captain is blowing his gut up there, James Gagne up on the thing, and all of a sudden they see that the pine tree is gone. So they all get down on all fours and start to salaam in front of the pine tree. You see, I think now you're wondering why I'm telling you this story, because I think the Democrats are down on their knees saying, "Good, good Republicans, you just keep doing that, and you'll never get another Hispanic vote as long as you live."
Wow.
25 states. I mean, that's a lot of governors who are joining this. It's certainly motivated against the president. It's just another way to use a tactic to block his efforts to promulgate his policy after Congress won't give him the opportunity to do it. And he's a constitutional lawyer, you know.
Let's assume that they're right.
Yeah. Oh,
let's
okay.
assume that it's going to the Supreme Court of the United States at some point, which will say, "You're right, that mean old president had no authority. He exceeded his authority." Politically, it's a beautiful thing from the point of view of the Democrats. What did he have to lose? He goes out, he says that this is what we're going to do. I don't see how this turns out to be a negative for Obama.
Wow, I'm thinking of all the 5 million people who thought that they were going to get a break.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about the politics there. If I were Barack Obama, I'd be really, really worried because right now, two of his key policies, his signature legislation domestically and internationally, are headed to the Supreme Court. And he does not have a majority there.
No, he doesn't.
So I think when this ruling by a Southern Texas judge who was known in advance to be against Obama and against this reform, we're calling it, just seems like it makes common sense. This was expected. I think the next level, the appeals court, will say go ahead with it, and I hope the INS is ready then, or what is Homeland Security now?
Right,
will go right
immediately
ahead and ram
through if it gets a stay?
Millions of applications.
What if it gets a stay?
Yeah, but will they be funded?
I don't know that this hasn't been stayed. I guess they've decided not to implement the final step of the program,
right.
But
exactly.
To continue to get ready, so it effectively stops it.
The other thing that's going on though, Mike, is that Homeland Security has been directed to stop going after children, stop going after people who are actual citizens in everything but name and legality, and to kind of like go after bad illegal immigrants, go on the border, get gang members, go after criminals and drug dealers. And this judge doesn't even like that. He says the president has overstepped his authority by telling the...
Well, they keep saying that he did not require procedures for changing federal rules, and yet they correct. Admit even within the ruling that those rules are not overly clear.
Right.
And are vague.
Right. And there's one other thing, too, and constitutional lawyers are saying this. Immigration is clearly a federal matter. It is not a state matter. It's never been handled as a state matter. And so that's a hard barrier to get over in the court if we're doing it from a legal point of view and not a political decision.
So it has a very good chance of getting this decision getting reversed at the
appeals
circuit.
Level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well... But then again, we don't know how far up it'll go.
I mean, then there'll be an appeal. But,
yeah.
You know.
It's still 5-4, as Rosemary points out.
Yeah.
But again, that's when it gets to the Supreme Court. If they can get one ruling at the appeals level saying it's okay and they ran through a bunch of applications, then you have actual people's lives on the line. And we already know the court is a little more susceptible to acting compassionately when people are involved.
Yeah.
As it was with gay rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And gay marriage, sure.
Yeah. And with Obamacare, with health care, people certainly have to be thinking, are we going to disenfranchise, are we going to take away health care from people who now had it?
Mm. Well, say a prayer for Judge Ginsburg that her health holds out.
And she doesn't. And she's 100% sober.
And 100% sober. Well, yeah. You know, who knows what she'll do if she had a drink.
But. Wait, sobriety? Wait,
did I miss something?
Yeah.
She claimed last week, I believe it was on Friday, she said that her quote was, someone asked her about napping during the State of the Union address, and she said, well, to be clear, I was not 100% sober.
What she said afterward was that she had a delicious dinner. They went out and had a great meal. That's a tradition for the justices that do attend the State of the
yes.
Union address,
uh-huh.
Which isn't all of them.
And who brought the wine, Mike?
Right.
Oh, Justice Kennedy.
Justice Kennedy brought a wonderful bottle of wine, she said.
I think maybe a couple bottles, right.
And she decided it was such a good meal, she needed to have a glass of wine with it. And later on, with all that food in her and that glass of wine, she dosed
off. She weighs about 38 pounds.
Well,
I mean, really, she had a half a glass of wine and that could
well,
do it to her.
Judge Souter, who is no longer on the court, left the court in 2009. His job was to nudge her when she would fall asleep. And his departure from the court led to that embarrassment. But I think there's a pattern of her being completely sober when they do deliberate.
She is a brilliant woman, a great jurist. She gave a public presentation recently where they said, well, if you could be anything you want, I mean, she's got a pretty good job. If you could be anything you want, what would it mean? She goes, oh, well, I would like to be a diva. She's just delightful.
She came to Great Barrington, too. She came to actually Lenox and gave a talk. Roselle and I went up to see her, and there was a guy who went to the same high school as she went to, James Madison.
Huh.
And he kept saying, I went to school with her. I got to talk to her. So he talked to her, and she was very nice to him.
Did she remember him?
She was very nice to him.
One doesn't really know.
Yeah.
You know, my mother had a habit of putting her hand over her mouth and saying, well, yes.
We don't know. The ruling will come out later in the spring.
Should the Supreme Court get the immigration case, we hope Justice Ginsburg is at her
at her best,
game,
at
right?
her prime.
Well, we pretty well know what she'll say.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about other stories and... Another habits of jurists. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School, Harlemville, New York. Early childhood through grade 12, all school open house Saturday, March 14th from 10 to 2, hawthornevalleyschool.org. Fleury Lumber, Route 10, East Hampton. Providing advice and assistance for projects small and large, items such as Benjamin Moore paints, hardwood flooring, Anderson windows, Trex decking, tools, lumber, hardware, FleuryLumber.com. And Evoke Style in Stuyvesant Plaza, presenting their new shoe salon featuring women's footwear with a range of styles and sizes. EvokeStyle.com.
When the red light's on, that's when we can, like, really go at it.
People are talking about me.
No one was talking about you.
So what kind of tree was that, Alan?
Monty Walsh. Monty Walsh, my old friend from the Boy Scouts, Troop 579, Arnold Frankel, the troop master, wrote and said it was a palm tree, and of course he's right.
In Mr. Roberts.
The
story
course,
you're telling.
The best movie, the greatest movie.
Yeah, it was the greatest movie ever made. Yeah.
You want to disagree with that, Rosemary?
Yes, I disagree with everything Alan is saying today. Come on, going with the wind. That should get a vote. That's even from your era.
Foy.
Ooh. All right. Your era. Oh. Okay.
E-R-R-O-R.
Let's talk about Syria for a moment.
You need more than a moment to describe what's going on.
A few minutes, and then we'll come back and discuss it more. But in what could be a diplomatic breakthrough in the Syrian conflict, a senior UN envoy said Tuesday that he had persuaded President Bashar al-Assad to stop bombing and shelling the northern city of Aleppo as part of a proposed 6-week truce. The announcement was made by the envoy. After diplomats were briefed during a closed session of the Security Council, it also came as Mr. Assad's forces launched a new offensive that threatened to cut off the main supply route to insurgents in Aleppo, renewing the Syrian military's push to encircle and besiege opposition-held areas of the city, which that is the first two paragraphs of the New York Times article, which I think may have been bearing the lead a little bit.
What do you think the lead is?
Well, I think the fact of the military action and cutting off the encircling and cutting this off while is going on in spite of the truce.
You're talking about Ukraine or
right,
Aleppo.
Yeah.
It's the same thing going
it's
on.
Same these story,
are,
isn't it?
These are bad guys using diplomacy to achieve military ends. And I read this story and also listened last night. Michael Morell, who was the deputy director of the CIA until he wrote those talking points that got the administration in trouble over Benghazi, forced his resignation. He's brilliant. And I listened to him on Charlie Rose last night, and I tried to draw a diagram of what was going on in the Middle East. I'm holding it up as if
holding
I
up the microphone.
You. Holding it up to the microphone.
Very impressive.
And even on paper, it's just a mess. And ultimately, however, it goes back to Iran and Saudi Arabia and don't forget Israel, all fighting for supremacy in the Middle East. That's what's really going on here. And all the rest of it, Syria, Yemen, Hezbollah, that's all a sideshow to that main act.
Yeah, but has this country made the right choices? in getting involved in some of the, in our picking our friends. So are we better off with, I know that this is not going to be a popular thing to say, but are we better off with Assad than with some of the criminals who, you know, we are supposedly backing so they can democratize that country? And we know that when they so-called democratize it, they're going to be worse than anybody.
See, I think that's even thinking too small. Assad right now controls half of Syria, and the rest is ISIS. Right. So if we back Assad, then we're fighting ISIS, and that's good. But ISIS is just really, I think, a stand-in for Iran.
How about if we don't back anybody?
Yeah.
In other words, how about if we let everybody work it out for themselves?
Right.
Look, you know, I think that that is really where we ought to be.
Well, if you took a poll, I think that the American public would probably agree with that point of view.
Okay, I don't agree with polls because we don't know what's going on. Yeah. I mean, I'm working on it, and it's a mess. And so if people take a poll, what the heck are they voting on? They're voting on the last video that came out of burning someone alive or beheading 21 people. And it's all well and good to say pull out, but what about Israel? That's like the keystone of our foreign policy is that we back Israel no matter what. That has come at a huge cost to the United States. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I would never say that. But we must recognize it's come at a huge cost.
Well,
we cannot.
Sounds like you're saying what's right or wrong. I myself am a fierce advocate of keeping Israel alive and well. But that doesn't mean that we have to get involved in Syria. It doesn't mean we have to do that. And by the way, Rosemary, the last time I looked, there wasn't such good relations, or as Selma Kaplan would say, such hotsy-totsy between Israel and this president.
Netanyahu is definitely playing that game and is looking to, is reminding people that he can go to Russia and other places too. So there's, it's all part of the same jockeying for power in the Middle East.
I am so impressed that you watched Charlie Rosen take notes.
Yes,
I did.
I was wondering how she avoided
Justice Ginsburg
from falling asleep, because he's the most boring man I've ever watched.
All right, all right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll be on the. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Yeah, after this news break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also go to our website. You can tweet us. You can use Facebook. You name it. And we would love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to contact us directly. Mike Spain, let's go with you in part two of our panel discussion and talk about your story about Robert Gavin of putting some grand jury reform proposals on trial.
Yeah, the chief judge, Judge Lipman, held his annual State of the Judiciary.
His last talk. One because he's being forced unfairly to retire because he's 70 years old.
Yes, he turned 70 this year and will be stepping down from the bench as required by the state constitution.
That's wrong. That's just wrong.
And reaffirmed by voters last fall.
His effort to have that changed was unsuccessful, and therefore he'll be departing, which is sad. He's been a great chief judge, I think.
He has been. He'll probably make a lot of money in
many people's opinions. But in his final State of the Judiciary, he called for opening up the grand jury process in certain situations when a police officer is involved in the death of a unarmed civilian or the near death, I guess somebody severely injured by a police officer, that when a grand jury meets to consider the evidence in the case and then comes out with a no bill, which means that nobody is indicted, nobody is charged in relationship to that death or that injury, that the grand jury evidence be made public in a way to demonstrate to the public all the evidence that went before the grand jury. And this, of course, follows up on the case of Eric Garner in Staten Island, where the New York City police used a chokehold to incarcerate a scofflaw, Eric Garner, who was selling cigarettes without permission or, you know, improperly selling cigarettes that weren't properly taxed. And he died. And there was a grand jury investigation, and it turned up no charges against the police officers involved, and that caused a great deal of protest. So opening up, in those rare situations, the grand jury evidence to public view would help the public understand. It would restore confidence in the grand jury process. Of course, Rob Gavin, who is our legal reporter covering legal affairs, raises a couple questions that it's unfair if you let the grand jury see all the evidence that was raised. Even though they don't come out with a charge, they often will. It's pejorative, it's accusatory, it's not favorable, it's not often, it may not be backed up by other evidence, and that might be why they don't charge somebody. But some harsh things are said about individuals in grand juries because they have the freedom of speaking confidentially to the grand jury. Mm. And he spoke to the chief judge about that, who says, well, you have to weigh that against the openness and the transparency that's necessary to give people confidence in these rare cases. And when someone is tried, when there is an indictment against somebody, there is a trial, and then the public does get to hear all that anyway. So it's really the best solution, he says. And this is sort of one of his parting efforts to try to, fix a problem that people have been, complaining about for a long time, and that is the secrecy of a grand jury. We've talked about it here. It's a problem. Many have called for reforms of grand juries. Our own former chief judge, Saul Wachtler, gave that great quote back 20 years ago or 30 years
ago. Ham sandwich.
Right. If a prosecutor could get a ham sandwich indicted right. If he wanted to. So it's he's setting the agenda as he's getting ready to step down as the chief judge.
Well, I have a real problem with this one. First of all, at least I'm thinking this through. I really don't know where I end up. But it seems to me that the first time you change the law so that only one crime has to be disclosed. In other words, when you're talking about, a grand jury on somebody who a police misbehavior. But what about all the other crimes? So is that right? I mean, is it right to say, okay, we're going to specify a single crime here that the grand jury minutes should be open for?
I think his measure called for any time there was a no bill return, that the information would become transparent.
Well, that would
and
be different.
It is different. It isn't just, of course, the most visible cases lately have been police brutality cases. But right. The way he worded it was any case that did not go to a jury. Because as soon as you have a public trial, then all the information is available. It's only in these cases, like Ferguson, although that's not New York State, of course, and that case in Staten Island that you talked about, where there is no bill, and that's it. We don't get to hear anything else about what was said said in front of a grand jury.
And what about juries? People are supposed to sit around in juries,
trial
juries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, grand jury's different.
And talk about it. Why not open them up? You know why not? Because, in fact, you have to allow them to work it out, right?
After the process, they are permitted to speak about the process. But
right,
they
they're permitted to.
Yes. They're not required to, but they're not required not to.
And in fact, the courts are coming now and knocking judges who have said to regular trial jurors, right. You don't have to talk to the press. Don't talk to the press. That's just overstepping their bounds because you are allowed in. And I think should talk to the press. I love that we have a call for making the process more transparent. I think it's a great idea. I'd like to see it in a bill like tomorrow.
Well, it's certainly tomorrow. What Judge Lipman is trying to do as he's ending his leadership in the court.
Well, there's a reason for it, I think, here, which is to make sure that this very volatile subject gets resolved in some way that people can understand. I mean, putting this out there so that everybody understands what's going on resolves it. But to Rosemary's point, okay, if you want to argue that all grand jury minutes should be open to the public, I'm for it, I suppose. Although I think there are things that would hinder that open discussion.
Well, you note that he's doing it with proposing two separate bills, one that would involve, police and civilians, and one that would be general. And I'll bet you the second one doesn't get much traction.
No, but what happens if somebody on a grand jury wants to ask a question and then says, hell no, I don't want my name in the paper? In other words, in the interest of justice, I will ask a question that may be unpopular in the press, but I'll ask it anyway.
Well, once again, We live in an open society, and part of that is you have to be open. It isn't neat. It isn't convenient sometimes. This is no different than legislators who say, well, I can't really negotiate a bill with my opponents in an open law room because the press will misconstrue it. But they might.
A lot of times, witnesses at grand juries are civilians, are not people in the public, and they may be intimidated and be hesitant about speaking if they know that what they're saying will be later available to the public. So they might be more candid if they know that their grand jury testimony is going to be kept secret. However, if there's an indictment, that very same person, his testimony or her testimony may be brought into the trial, or they may be called to testify at the trial. And if they say something different than what they told the grand jury, that's the famous case you always see in the movies. Well, you know, last June you told the grand jury this. Were you telling the truth? So it doesn't completely...
I like that impression, Mike.
Yes, it doesn't completely protect, someone from having their testimony made public. But in this particular bill, the second bill being talked about here, if there was no indictment, that would always remain secret. It would no longer be the case. So,
Mike, if I can, I just want to go back to Rosemary's wrongheaded approach on the comparison of the legislature and the conferences. In other words, the conferences are closed. They shouldn't be closed. You want to know why? Because they shouldn't be closed because these people are representatives. They're supposed to be representing us, and therefore, how the hell can we know what they're doing if they go into secret conference for that, right?
Hey, I would love for all the conferences to be open to the press and the public. However, I don't know that they would say what they do say now, and it probably wouldn't be nearly as interesting.
The argument has always been that they'll before then.
I'm sorry, I don't see the distinction. The conferences should be open.
I agree.
And the proceedings of grand juries that result in no bills, particularly in controversial cases, should be open.
In controversial cases.
Yes, involving police
that's
brutality.
A dual system. Is a heinous murder
it's easy. The law would be passed to say anytime there's no bill, the records are transparent. That's not like a homework assignment. It's not like every citizen in New York has to go read them. But newspaper reporters who do want to check it, media people, relatives who do want to see what happened, they have the right to go. And they ought to have the right to go and see what happened to that case.
I mean, in a case that does not involve the public, the police officers and civilians, in a case where there's just a homicide or an embezzlement or some other heinous crime, as they say, there's going to be a lot of testimony at the grand jury that becomes, that doesn't add up to a charge if there's a no bill. Yet, by making that public, you might really discredit innocent people, because if the grand jury found that, Joe were to testify at a grand jury and they didn't buy his testimony and he said the awful things about Mike Spain, well, those awful things would be on the record and it would be hurtful to me, even though the grand jury found that there was no basis based on other evidence, despite Joe's very pejorative comments against me.
That's all true.
Would never happen, Mike.
Right.
but I have a real issue with this business, Rosemary, we keep coming back to it, of some crimes, but not all crimes. I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, how do you define that?
I think they should all be open. This is not my argument. This is something Alan is coming up with to.
No, what's your argument?
Chief Judge has proposed that it would be crimes involving police officers and unarmed civilians when there's a death involved or a near death, which I think means a serious injury.
But why stop there?
Well, that's Rosemary's
that's my point.
Rhetorical
question.
I think you guys are agreeing.
Yeah.
Well,
and I'm just
really
telling you what a legal argument against that is.
Okay, he's tired of the argument. He's not coming out the clear winner. Let's move on.
Other topics?
Yes. We got better than that, Mike. We have a break. And we'll clear the air and we'll be back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Bradwell Ashokan Architecture and Planning in Kingston's Midtown Arts District. Energy-efficient architecture and planning throughout the Mid-Hudson Valley, ashokanarchitecture.com. And Elms College, Chicopee, Massachusetts, working to educate students with their core values of faith, community, justice, and excellence, elms.edu.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan and Rosemary and Mike and Joe are sitting around a rounded table and we are talking about topics of the day and we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we have a couple to share as Exhibit A.
Okay, Steve writes, a Harper's editor was called to serve on a grand jury in New York and wrote an excellent account of how it works that appears in the latest issue. I am an attorney, and even I was stunned by the complete control the prosecutor has over the process and how nearly impossible it is for a member of the jury to vote against an indictment when the prosecutor has determined an indictment should issue and vice versa. Worth checking out for anyone who's concerned about this issue. And then, let's see here. And then Robert says, making political deals like making sausage isn't pretty. Remember Lincoln bargaining for votes to outlaw slavery? As much fun as reporters might have covering open conferences and skewering the conferees, the result would be political paralysis, not better politics.
Nah, prove okay. It to me.
Okay. Let's see here. Tony says the reason for grand juries in England was to prevent innocent people from being tried. If the person was truly innocent and an evil government official tries to get him, the grand jury is there to prevent it. If it is dismissed at that point, the libelous content of the ill-founding accusation could not be aired. However, in cases involving the police, the DA has an opposite problem. With the cops helping gather evidence, the DA cannot get convictions. So cases accuse cops should not be handled by any DA.
Good point.
And then, good morning, panel, from Mark. Has there ever been an investigation into who it is or what companies have been profiting from the sales of weapons to ISIS, Syria, and other Middle Eastern countries? It is not believable these nations are manufacturing their own weapons. Who is it that has been making money by giving these nations the weapons of war?
ISIS has well-armed thanks to the U.S. military that left a bunch of stuff for the Iraqi military, and they swept over it. And now we've just approved the sale of drones to combatants. They have to sign some pledge that they'll do it for good. They'll only use the drones for good, and the U.S. will monitor them. But now we're going to sell drones. It's just crazy. Good point.
Huh.
Yeah, that drone story is incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you can have them. We're going to make sure you don't do anything bad with them. Oh, you can only deliver goods for Amazon or something.
And Jack says, as I wrote last week after Joe's interview with an author advocating let them work it out themselves, as Alan just proposed, fails on two points. One, it is not possible to, quote, isolate the Middle East from the rest of the world, even if we have abandoned Israel to its fate in such a scenario. And two, even if we could, there would inevitably be accomplished via a bloodbath, which would not be tolerated by many in the rest of the world, which would, ta-da, bring us back to point one. Forget this idea, just a way to wishful thinking. We have to help solve it as messy as it is. Yeah, well, that's fine, except when we do the wrong thing, right?
I think we pretty much are past that point. We've already done the wrong thing, and now we're paying the consequences. We are in the middle of the bloody mess, yes.
Sure. Hi, all. So, David, wanted to say that regarding the UN, Russia is on the Security Council, so this will influence decisions on Ukraine and Syria. Also, a lot of Russians go on vacation to Syria.
Not anymore.
I was going to think.
Not at the current time.
Okay, that's enough for this.
We're down to 100 people. 100 people who are going to go to Mars.
Oh, gosh.
And they're not going to come back.
It's like cocoon.
They're calling it hibernation.
Okay.
Hibernation.
Hibernation. So,
which is a lot better than death.
High and nation.
Hibernation. Okay. So 100 finalists have been chosen for a one-way trip to Mars. Dutch nonprofit Mars One has named 100 people who will remain in the running for a one-way trip to Mars, expected to leave Earth in 2024. So just 9 years away. Out of more than 200,000 people who applied, which I find to be the most interesting part of the story, by the way, that 200,000 people want to go to Mars to, you know, forget it. 24 will be trained for the mission, and 4 will take the first trip at all, if all goes according to plan. And what could go wrong? If this is the first you're hearing of a one-way trip to Mars, well, then there a lot has been written on this, but the round of eliminations was made after Norbert
Kraft. You're too late. You can't get in.
Mars One's chief medical officer interviewed 660 candidates and said they were ready to leave everything behind to venture to Mars. And then there's some really did you look at this article, the really creepy pictures of the of like
the candidates?
Yeah, well, of them and their
On their Facebook pages in some cases.
Well, but also they had the of what their living conditions would be like.
Oh, right.
Of their like their pods. Mm-hmm. Of where your hibernation place.
Yeah. My favorite part of the story is that they're going to turn the rest of the elimination process to figure out who gets to go into a reality series. So it's like survival. Survival on Mars.
The opportunity to go to Mars. And some compared this when it first surfaced to like the explorers that came to the New World, and they knew they were never going to make it back to their homeland. Mm-hmm. Mm. I don't think so.
Well, I am not interested. I wouldn't do this, although I did try to become the first journalist in space when they had that competition.
Before, I remember that.
Before, you know, Christy McAuliffe and the rest of them died in a horrible accident. So I'm not interested myself, but I did have that feeling for it. Like, this is pretty brave. You want to do something really good with your life and meaningful.
What would you bring with you? I mean, if you could have Wi-Fi and, you know, a good iPod and maybe a Kindle, you know, where you could download any books and it lets you, you know, do it for free. Amazon would probably do that. I mean, you know, you could keep yourself occupied.
It would seem like you should get pretty good Wi-Fi service, right?
Yeah, right. There's nothing.
Like satellite, like good satellite.
I'm amazed at how young they are, too. I mean, like the oldest one is only 60.
I believe, yeah, you're absolutely right.
He'd be 69.
There were not many, they excluded many married couples.
Yeah.
There were a large, a disproportionate amount of people, and I don't know what you want to read into this, were from the Washington, D.C. area.
Maryland, I do want to say I have some people I'd like to nominate to go. Just ship him to Mars, yeah.
But, you know, we laugh about this, but this is a serious thing. This is a $6 billion trip for just the first 4 people. And then as you mentioned, they'll be televising the remainder of this competition to narrow
to
down
to raise some money for the trip, sort of like a bake sale to send them to Mars. Sorry, it's hard not to joke about it.
I remember when the governor was asked at a press Governor Cuomo, the first Cuomo, was asked at a press conference who he would recommend as a journalist to go to. To go on that trip you were talking about, Rosemary.
First,
and there was a guy who raised his hand at the press conference and asked the governor whether he would recommend him. Now, I don't want to use the guy's name, to be honest. And I think everybody in the room would have, you know, put a $10 bill into the...
into the kitty to send him.
Yeah, send him away.
Please go.
Well, so nobody here would do it? No. No, we're good.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I like it here on Earth.
Yeah, sort of like oxygen. I'm sort of addicted to oxygen.
So the second question would be if you could go and then come back? Which I don't really understand why you can't.
Well, they don't have the infrastructure to launch a rocket from Mars to get you back here.
But they will eventually.
Well, long after these people are dead and gone.
I don't know. I think there's an exponential, you know.
I mean, once you're there, you're there.
I'm trying to think.
Well,
what's worse, going to Somalia or going to Mars? Which would be worse? Going to sections of Syria right now or going to Mars?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the perspective people look at it. Seriously. I mean, they say the world is going to hell and we would rather go to Mars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there you go. Final story, and then we'll end there. But it seems that after great acrimony, the mayor of New York City and the police union leader have seemed to make nice, and what they're calling détente,
and Edward Mullins of the Sergeants Benevolent Association and Mayor de Blasio have met on several occasions over the past several weeks, have had good and productive conversations, I believe is how they're being described. And as the New York Times reports this morning, that it was very, while they're doing it below
very
the
low key. Yeah.
Very low key and under the below the radar, they are indeed making progress, and apparently the mayor is not holding a grudge for being called a nincompoop by
right. Well, Ed Mullins Mr. called Edward the mayor Mullins. A nincompoop, and he's the president of the Sergeants Benevolent Association.
Yes.
But Patrick J. Lynch, who was the president of the full PBA,
and who is facing a full right. electoral assault.
Yeah, he hasn't made peace with the mayor. He's the one that kind of orchestrated the turn your back on the mayor during the.
But
funerals.
He's being pushed out. He's yeah. being.
Well, and
clear.
I think it's costing him his position as head of PBA. But this guy who did call the mayor a total nincompoop is now calling him a gentleman.
Yeah.
So that's progress.
Well, they didn't have support from people. People generally mm-hmm. were siding with the mayor. I think the mayor's done some really good,
outreach efforts.
Yeah,
sure.
this is mm-hmm. what politics is about, something our president maybe could look at. But I would like to point out that a front page article in the New York Times is not working below the radar. I think this has been pushed out in the public for a good reason, for politics.
No,
too.
That's a very good point. That's mm-hmm. a very good point.
Although, at a good time. Yeah.
Although apparently the talks have been going on since...
Yeah, and you see that they're going well, and the,
yes.
and the mayor is looking really good. And wow, front page article! We suddenly discovered it. Come on.
Well, it was planted. You're suggesting by those supporting the mayor, but
yeah, I didn't see a whole lot of no comments in that story.
Right, not a lot of anonymous sources either. Well, there were some.
And on that, we end this hour. We'll be back tomorrow. Rosemary will be here. Stu Shinsky will join us. Alan, of course, and we'll be back for another. And then, Mike, you'll be back. This grouping will be back on Friday.
That's right.
Excellent.
One more time.
Look forward to that as well. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank
be
you.
Well, and we'll continue with the roundtable after this short break.